Good morning. In the beginning of the book of Genesis, God created the world and he created humans in his image. We learn that was good and that God provided for Adam and Eve and he gave them dominion over the earth and charged them to be fruitful and multiply and to replenish the earth and subdue it. They were living in God's presence and they had everything they could have ever needed. But Adam and Eve decided that they wanted to disobey God and distrust him and take matters into their own hands. They trusted in themselves and not in God, and they were cursed because of this. After that, in chapter 4, we learn about Cain and Abel and the first murder. After God cursed Cain for this, in Genesis 4:13, Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, you have driven me today away from the ground and from your face. I shall be hidden. I shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me." Then the Lord said to him, "Not so. If anyone kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold." And the Lord put a mark on Cain, lest anyone who found him should attack him. Later in that chapter, we hear about Lamech, who is the first man to have multiple wives, and he is proud to be evil and violent. In Genesis 4, Lamech said to his wives, "Ada and Zillah, hear my voice, you wives of Lamech. Listen to what I said. Say, I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for striking me. If Cain's revenge is sevenfold, then Lamech's is 77-fold. Ever since Adam and Eve are expelled from the garden, it just seems like evil is ramping up exponentially. Today, I wanted to preach about God's response to this evil, the flood. If you'd open your Bibles to Genesis 6, we'll be spending most of our time in this section. The flood is a very interesting story, and sometimes it has the reputation of being just a children's story. Without a doubt, the flood is very vivid and good for children's imaginations. However, the flood is not just a cute little boat and two-by-two animals smiling and everything's happy, a good old time. However, the flood is actually an image of death and destruction and God's great judgment and sorrow. We need to be careful not to belittle or neglect that powerful message. And while I believe that it literally happened covering the earth, this story is not primarily given to us as fighting material for evolutionists and atheists. As Christians, our primary focus is not to debate science. And at the end of the day, we need to be focused on what really matters, which is Christ's kingdom and salvation. And we need to read the Bible for spiritual application first. The Bible is written to us so we can understand God and understand how he would have us to live. And the message of the Bible is getting into a closer relationship with God. It's not critical that we understand every scientific aspect of the flood, of course. God can do anything. All we have is his word to go off. And endless speculation about all the physics and biology and geology doesn't really help anyone come closer to Christ. That being said, we should read this story, trying to gain knowledge about God and further understand who he is. And that will ultimately change our hearts and be the most helpful to us. Before we draw some applications about the flood, I just wanted to scan through the flood story real quick and focus on some of the key elements of the story so we're enveloped in the context. Starting in Genesis 6:5, if you want to follow along, I'll let you know when I skip verses. "The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of his thoughts of his heart were only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, 'I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them.' But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord." Skipping down to the second half of verse 9, "Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his generation. Noah walked with God." Verse 11, Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. And God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make yourself an ark. Skipping to verse 17. For behold, I will bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh in which the breath of life under heaven, everything that is on earth shall die. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you, your wives, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Verse 22, Noah did this. He did all that God commanded him. Then the Lord said to Noah, go into the ark, you and all your household, for I have seen that you are righteous before me in this generation. Chapter 7, verse 4, for in 7 days I will send rain on the earth, 40 days and 40 nights, and every living thing that I have made, I will blot out from the face of the ground. And Noah did all that the Lord had commanded him. Noah was 600 years old when the flood of waters came upon the earth. And Noah and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with them went into the ark to escape the waters of the flood. Of clean animals and of animals that are not clean, and of birds and of everything that creeps on the ground, two and two, male and female, went into the ark with Noah, as God had commanded Noah. And after 7 days, the waters of the flood came upon the earth. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on that day, all the fountains of the great deep burst forth, and the windows of the heavens were opened, and rain fell upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. Verse 16, and those that entered, male and female of all flesh, went in, as God had commanded him. And the Lord shut him in. The flood continued 40 days on the earth. The waters increased and bore up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. The waters prevailed and increased greatly on the earth, and the ark floated on the face of the waters. And the waters prevailed so mightily on the earth that all the high mountains under the whole heaven were covered. The waters prevailed above the mountains, covering them 15 cubits deep. Just as a side note, I think this is a huge message. These mountains are huge and menacing and seemingly unconquerable, but God has covered them 15 cubits deep. This is a huge amount of power on display from God, and he is truly declaring that he is in control of this earth and that he is greater than the mountains, and he should be feared and obeyed. Continuing on, verse 21, and all flesh died that moved on the earth, birds, livestock, beasts, all swarming creatures that swarm on the earth, and all mankind. Everything on dry land in whose nostrils was the breath of life died. He blotted out every living thing that was on the face of the ground, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens. And they were blotted out from the earth. Only Noah was left and those who were with him on the ark. And the waters prevailed on the earth for 150 days. But God remembered Noah and all the beasts and all the livestock that were with him in the ark. And God made a wind blow over the earth, and the waters subsided. The fountains of the deep and the windows of the heavens were closed. The rain from the heavens was restrained, and the waters receded from the earth continually. At the end of 150 days, the waters had abated, and in the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. And the waters continued to abate until the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the first day of the month, the tops of the mountains were seen. After that, it seems like a series of weeks, Noah is sending forth the raven and the dove. And then finally in verse 11, the dove came back to him in the evening, and behold, in her mouth was a freshly plucked olive leaf. So Noah knew that the waters had subsided from the earth. Then he waited another 7 days and sent forth the dove, and she did not return to him anymore. In the 601st year, in the first month, the first day of the month, The waters were dried from off the earth, and Noah removed the covering of the ark and looked, and behold, the face of the ground was dry. In the second month, on the 27th day of the month, the earth had dried out. Then God said to Noah, "Go out from the ark, you and your wife, and your sons' wives with you." At this point, Noah's family and all the animals left the ark, and once they're off, starting in verse 20, "Then Noah built an altar to the Lord and took some of every clean animal and some of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar." Notice that once Noah is saved, he just begins worshiping God. Verse 21, "And when the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma, the Lord said in his heart, 'I will never again curse the ground because of man. For the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I ever again strike down every living creature as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease.' And God blessed Noah and his sons, and he said to them, 'Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. The fear of you and the dread of you shall be on every beast of the earth and upon every bird of the heavens, upon everything that creeps on the ground and all the fish of the sea. Into your hand they are delivered. Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. And as I gave you the green plants, I give you everything. But you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is its blood. And for your lifeblood I will require a reckoning. From every beast I will require it from man. From his fellow man I will require a reckoning from the life for the life of man. Whoever sheds the blood of a man, by man his blood shall be shed. For God made man in his own image. And you be fruitful and multiply, increase greatly on the earth and multiply in it." Then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, "Behold, I establish my covenant with you and your offspring after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the livestock, and every beast of the earth with you, as many as came out of the ark. It is for every beast of the earth. I establish my covenant with you, that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth." And God said, "This is the sign of the covenant that I make between me and you, and every living creature that is with you for all future generations. I have set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring the clouds over the earth and the bow is seen in the clouds, I will remember my covenant that is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh, and the water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth." God said this. God said to Noah, "This is the sign of the covenant that I have established between me and all the flesh that is on the earth." From what I can deduce from this story, I see this flow of thought. Humans have an inherent flaw in their hearts that are inclined to evil. And this saddens God up to a point where he actually regrets creating them. So he decides on a solution. He'll destroy all life on earth in a cleansing flood, basically clicking the cosmic reset button on earth. And then he will deal with sin by beginning to enter into covenant relationships with humans instead of having to constantly destroy them. He wants to save those who are righteous, and he wants us to be restored from evil like he restored the earth from evil. One overall theme that I see is that God is powerful and to be feared. A problem that we have is that human hearts are inclined to evil. God mentions this story, or this concept, twice in the story. First in Genesis 6:5, when he's deciding to bring the flood, speaking about mankind, he says, "Every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." And in 8:21, when God is making the covenant with Noah, "The intention of man's heart is evil from his youth." Instead of intention of the heart, some other translations use imagination of the heart or inclination of the heart. The Hebrew word for this intention or inclination can also be defined as form or framing. The word's also used in Isaiah 29 with imagery of forming pottery. In the same way, replacing intention with form, the form of the thoughts of his hearts was only evil continually, and the form of man's heart is evil from his youth. Naturally, as humans, our heart's frame of mind is just evil, and that is a huge barrier that separates us from God. In Mark 7, when Jesus is talking to the Pharisees, he says, "Do you not see that whatever goes into a person from outside cannot defile him, since it enters not his heart, but his stomach, and is expelled? Thus he declared all foods clean." And he said, "What comes out of a person is what defiles him. For from within, out of the heart of man, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. All these things come from within, and they defile a person." Jesus teaches us that hearts inclined to evil leads us to being unclean and defiled. Genesis 6:6 is another critical verse in the story that outlines our problem. I'll read it again. "And the Lord regretted that he created man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart." This Hebrew word for grieve can also be translated as pain or hurt. In Ecclesiastes, the word is used, "He who quarries stones is hurt by them, and he who splits logs is endangered by them." I'm not sure exactly how quarrying worked back then, but I imagine it involved getting hit by rocks, falling rocks occasionally. Real excruciating pain. Of course, while that's in a different context, we have to think about the kind of pain we bring to God when we sin. And that ought to change the way that we look at sin. We need to make sure that we aren't bringing this kind of grief to God's heart. Also, how often is it that we have this mindset? Do we reflect on our sins and the sins of other people with grief? Does it pain us in the heart about these sins? Or do we sometimes laugh them off or shrug them off? We need to be more grieved at sin. So how can we change the fact that our hearts are inclined to evil? And how can we stop being a grievance to God? Well, for one, I'd like to direct your attention back to chapter 8, verse 21 and 22. "I will never again curse the ground because of man, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I ever again strike down every living creature as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease." We are still living in a world where the intention of man's heart is evil. There are still plenty of Cains and Lamechs of this world. People fly airplanes into buildings, drive trucks through large crowds, shoot guns indiscriminately from hotel buildings and in schools. People steal and lie and are sexually immoral. But there's a difference between now and the days of the flood. Now God says he will let the earth run on its course. He's not going to have another great physical catastrophe to cleanse the earth again. Of course, everyone still has to face final judgment, and God will destroy the earth in fire, but he's not going to destroy all flesh in this way again. He gave us the rainbow as the sign of this promise, and as a reminder to him and to us of that promise. Try to remember that next time you see a rainbow. That God's mercy, he will not destroy us with the flood. That's because nowadays God deals with sin in a different way. He deals with sins with covenants. I guess God would prefer not to have to repeatedly wipe us out, and instead wants to provide a way for us to come to him by his means. In the days of Israel, people were able to have a relationship with God through the temple, where the high priest interceded for them. In this way, Israelites were able to maintain a relationship with God. Nowadays, Jesus is our perfect high priest and of a new covenant. In Hebrews it says, "But when Christ came as high priest of the good things that are now already here, he went through the greater and more perfect tabernacle that is not made with hands, that is to say, is not a part of this creation. He did not enter by means of the blood of goats and calves, But he entered the most holy place once and for all by his own blood, thus obtaining eternal redemption. We are not destined to be wiped out by a flood because of our hearts inclined to evil. Thanks be to God, Jesus has obtained redemption for our sins. God, however, wants us to be righteous. In 1 Peter 2, Peter references Noah's righteousness, saying, "For if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell and committed them to the chains of gloomy darkness to be kept until judgment, if he did not spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah, a herald of righteousness, with seven others, when he brought a flood upon the world of the ungodly, if by turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to ashes, he condemned them to extinction, making them an example of what is going to happen to the ungodly, and if he rescued righteous Lot, greatly distressed by the sensual conduct of the wicked," skipping to verse 9, "then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from trials and to keep the unrighteous under punishment until the day of judgment. We are saved of judgment through Jesus. Through him we can live. Peter further develops this idea in chapter 3 when he equates the flood to baptism. 3:17. "For it is better to suffer for doing good, if that should be God's will, than for doing evil. For Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in flesh, but made alive in the Spirit, in which he went and proclaimed to the spirits in prison, because they formerly did not obey. When God's patience waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was being prepared, in which a few, that is 8 persons, were brought safely through water. Baptism, which now corresponds to this, now saves you, not as a removal of dirt from the body, but as an appeal to God for a good conscience, through the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who has gone into heaven and is at the right hand of God, with angels, authorities, and powers having been subjected to him." The story of the flood is a story of baptism. When we are baptized spiritually, it is as if we are on the ark and we are preserved from God's judgment. The earth was fully submerged, just as we, when we were baptized. And the earth emerged from the waters, purified from wicked people, as we emerge from baptism, purified from sin. Hebrews tells us, "By faith, Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear, constructed an ark for the saving of his household. By this, he condemned the world and became an heir of righteousness that comes by faith." Noah had faith that God would save him from destruction because he was righteous and he obeyed God. And that wasn't any short-time faith. It took him 100 years to build the ark and pretty much a year being, you know, involved in the flood. And he had to wait on the Lord. And now we share in a similar faith that one day we will be resurrected and brought home with the salvation of Christ. If you are living a sinful life that is grieving God to his heart, if you want your heart to not be evil continually, God really wants to have a relationship with you. And he wants to save you from judgment through baptism so you can live a righteous life. If you'd like to study further with someone, or if you need any prayers, let somebody know before you go, or come forward as we stand and sing.